When I first met Clyde, I suppose he was in his early to mid-70s. I'd preached his wife's funeral a few months earlier. She had died angry. And now I was preaching his funeral. I still have the letter that he wrote to me that they delivered with all the details about the funeral and a number of arrangements that need to be taken care of and plenty of money to take care of everything. And he had begun the letter with the words, "You're too young to understand." He had gone to the cemetery and he only owned one gun, and it was a 22 rifle. And he had propped it on his wife's tombstone and knelt down and put it in his mouth and pulled the trigger. He also died angry. Years earlier, he and his wife were both a part of a very close-knit group in the church. He was a deacon. And somewhere along the way, someone had said something that had hurt their feelings deeply. Shortly after I moved there, he had come to my office and wanted to make sure that I knew his story. And so I listened. And the incident had become the center of both of their lives for the last 30 plus years. They never got over it. They didn't want to. You, somewhere along the way, may have been abused by a brother or a sister who should have restored you, but instead they chose to condemn you. Or worse. Or perhaps you've been neglected by churchgoers who should have cared enough to seek you out and sit you down and talk to you and bring you back. But they didn't. I don't deny that many of us have been victims of neglect and selfish, hurtful acts by those in and around the church. But there also may be another side to the story. There usually is, isn't there? There's a very real possibility that sometimes we choose to remain victims when we have the opportunity to put something behind us and move on in our life. It surely is a waste of some good spiritual potential when we fixate our lives on things that happened in the past or what could have or should have been different in our lives. Most of us who have been hurt could persuade any jury, anywhere, anytime of how the treatment that we receive from other Christians should have been different. But the truth is, it's not any different. It is what it is. Things are no different. And no amount of time spent dwelling on how another sheep hurt us or should have done something different is going to change our present situation, is it? Imagine someone who's been shot and rushed to the emergency room who refused to accept treatment because they were so angry at the person who shot them. With physical hurts, we immediately seek help, don't we? The quicker, the better. But emotional and spiritual hurts seem to engender a completely different kind of response than any other. When we're shot by someone in the church, we tend to focus on the shooter and not the healer. and on our wound rather than being healed. Two things that we need to remember. One is that one of our enemy's most effective strategies in distracting us and getting us off track is that he knows that healing is available, and he wants to keep us away from that healing. And also, Satan would have us forget or never completely understand that being broken is a necessary part of God's plan for our growth. You've heard it. The same sun that melts wax does what? Hardens clay. Now, if you haven't heard it, then write that down somewhere and remember it. The same event can occur in two people's life, and one person can use that event to become a better, more mature person. And another person can use that exact same event to become bitter and angry for the rest of our life. The Apostle Paul, who begged God to remove his affliction, came to an important realization, and I want to paraphrase this for you. It's from a little paraphrase called The Message. You realize that a paraphrase is like a brief commentary. This is a paraphrase of 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9. It says, "And then he told me, my grace is enough. It's all you need. My strength comes into its own in your weakness." Once I heard that, I was glad to let it happen. I quit focusing on the handicap and began appreciating the gift. It was the case of Christ's strength moving in my weakness. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9. The Message. I quit focusing on the handicap. This is the action that is essential to recovery. But sadly, most of us, when we get hurt, we stop acting the way that we know that we should. We just shut down. And just at the point where we can receive God's healing, and just at the point where we can receive benefit from this difficulty that's come into our life, we shut down and we quit. And we never receive the blessing that God intends to happen in our life through this difficulty. How in the world can we learn to allow our wounds to heal rather than to fester and cripple us or maybe kill us? Well, the first thing is that we have to accept one reality. And I'd like to illustrate it to you this morning. Is there anyone here in this audience this morning? And I'm not asking for an obvious answer, I'm asking for a real answer. Is there anyone present in this audience this morning who's not been hurt by something that someone said or did or didn't say or didn't do? I want you to raise your hand. If you have never been hurt by something that someone said or didn't say or did or didn't do. Now, it's usually not very polite to turn around and look behind you, but I want everybody to turn around and look and see how many hands are up this morning. Turn around and look. See how many hands are up. That means we have some honest folks here. Really. Now, I don't want you to forget that you just turned around and saw, because it's real. I have been hurt. You have been hurt. Every single one of us have been hurt by something that someone said or didn't say or did or didn't do. And so, Paul reminded the Corinthian Christians, no trial or no temptation has seized you except what is common to man. That's the first thing you need to accept. And it's the first thing we don't want to accept. Because when we're hurt, nobody has ever been hurt like I have been hurt. Nobody. It's the worst hurt that there has ever been. But if we want to deal with the hurt that we've experienced, the first thing that we need to do is accept the truth that everyone has been hurt. And you see, there's a problem with showing your scars. What is it? You got to give equal time. And you find out pretty quickly that when other people unbutton their shirt and show you their scars may be a lot worse than your scars. There's lots of paraplegics and quadriplegics in this world. I've seen some pretty rough scars, haven't you? I've seen some scars that are a lot worse than any scars that I have. And I think I have some pretty good scars. Sometimes if you want to compare scars, you know, I won't say I will with you, but I have some scars. And so the first thing that we must do if we're going to move on in our life and become what the Lord wants us to, and even, yes, receive the advantage, the benefit. All things work together for good for them who love God, who are called according to His purpose. All things. Then we have to understand that we all have scars. We all have been hurt. And then we have to get beyond the victim mentality. In the Gospel of John, we see an example of how Christ asked this individual to leave his woundedness behind. And I realize that we've used this text fairly recently in a lesson in John chapter 5, verse 1 through 9. I know that we have. But it's an incredible illustration of that there's a problem with showing your scars. Jesus knew this man. Even though this is the first time he met him, he knew all about him. And he knew that this illness, this invalid, that these problems that he had become his identity. It's who he was. It's how he saw himself. It's how he talked about himself to others. It's how he portrayed himself to others when he talked about himself. He was a wounded, helpless victim. And the first five verses of John chapter 5 are the setting that came on this great number of people by this pool, Bethesda. Lots of sick folks. They all said they wanted to get well, and they all did want to get well. But he comes up to this one man, and he asks him the question, do you want to get well? And we've talked about already, so I'm not going to dwell on it, that that's an incredible question. Why would you ask someone who has, for all of these many years, has been an invalid, 38 years, why would you ask him if he wanted to get well? But you see, his answer provides an insight to the reason for the question. When he asked him, do you want to get well? He didn't say yes. Yes, sir. He didn't say no. He didn't say either one of those things. What did he say? Well, he slipped into victim speak, didn't he? And it's what he did. And it's what he talked about 24/7 with anybody that would listen. That's why there wasn't anybody around to listen. Because he had told his story so many times that nobody wanted to hear it anymore. And that's another one of the things that really hurts our feelings. When we've been hurt by someone, we think if everybody heard my side of the story, I mean, if they knew the way it really was, then they would understand me and they would sympathize with me. And the time comes that we get our opportunity to tell our story, and people, if they don't say ho-hum, then they say, well, I'm sorry, and they move on with their life. And we expect them to fall out and pass out on the floor in sympathy, but they didn't. And so we tell them our story again. Maybe they didn't understand completely, and so we tell it with a little more emphasis and a little more heartfelt emotion in it. And their life is not rocked. And we become bitter because we want their life to be rocked over our problems. Because that's our life. And it's become that important to us in our life. I had a good friend of mine, a preacher, an evangelist, who was well known in the brotherhood. And he stayed in my home many times. And in fact, my wife and I had our wedding reception in his home. And I remember we were discussing a particular congregation one time, and he looked at me and he said, "Ken, they've got a good case of the can't help it's." And I understood exactly what he meant. The whole congregation. They couldn't do anything because they always had the excuse and reasons, and it didn't matter what, they immediately came up with reasons why they couldn't do this and why they couldn't do that. And so they had a good case of it, and so do many people. Some of us have a good case of the can't help it. We can't do this because, and we've got an excuse for everything in the world. We can't do it because I've been hurt, because somebody said something 10 years ago or didn't say something, or they didn't treat me the way that I was supposed to be treated. You see, interestingly, in this scenario in John 5, God's not going to force himself on anyone, no matter how obvious the need is, if we don't make the decision to accept that healing. This man had apparently embraced victimhood for 38 long years. And so when Jesus asked him the question, "Do you want to get well?" then the man launched into this speech. "Sir, when the water is stirred, I don't have anybody to put me in the pool. And by the time I get there, somebody's already gotten in, and my family, they're not here anymore, and my legs don't work, and I can't get over there fast enough, and other people get there faster." And he just went on and on and on and on and on and on. And there was no end. Did he answer Jesus' question? Well, you can say yes or you can say no. Did he want to get well? The truth is, he wouldn't answer the question. You know why? Because he didn't believe that things were ever going to change. And with his mindset, they weren't ever going to change. If they did change, it was only going to get worse in his life. Like Clyde, he was going to get more bitter. He had settled into his victimhood mentality. It was who he was. He had accepted that this was who he was always going to be. And it would have been so if he hadn't let Jesus enter his life. Because you see, there's really nothing else that can really change us. Not really. We might put on a show and we might act like it, but once we're struck with our victimhood, then it takes Jesus to be able for us to truly let it go and put it behind us. Alfred de Souza wrote, "For a long time, it had seemed to me that life was about to begin, real life. But there was always some obstacle in the way, something to be gotten through first, some unfinished business, time still to be served, a debt to be paid, and then life would begin. At last, it dawned on me that these obstacles were my life." That's not easy to accept, is it? Can you remember a time in your life when you had a goal and there was something you were working to accomplish and it just seemed like it was going to happen as soon as you got around this next bend or over this next hill, then it was going to be there? And when you got over that hill, then what was there? There was another hill. And when you got around that bend, what was there? There was another curve. And then you said, okay, just 3 more months. And you got around that curve in 3 more months, and guess what? There was another one, and another one, and another one, and another one, wasn't there? And you can either become discouraged about that or realize that there's some advantages in these hills and curves. That these hills and curves are our life. And you know, I've come to realize a similar thing about the church, and I don't want you to get your feelings hurt, because you can say the same thing about me, because when I'm talking about you, the church, I'm talking about me also. These flawed people, these perceived obstacles to my joy, are the community that Jesus has ordained for me. They are my fellowship. They are my family. And waiting for them to meet my needs is going to get me frustrated until I leave this planet. And blaming them for what inevitably and invariably happens in every life is going to keep me from being productive in my life. And that attitude will only endanger not only my welfare, but also my children's welfare, my grandchildren, and my friends around me. You say, well, that's a pretty pessimistic view. I don't think so. Because I'm also one of those flawed people who are obstacles to somebody's joy. That you have to have God's grace to deal with me. But the amount of energy that you invest in choosing bitterness or choosing healing is probably about the same. Do you realize how much energy it takes to stay mad all your life? I mean, you got to have some discipline. Now, it's kind of a negative discipline. But you got to wake up in the morning and recall the things that hurt you. And you've got to keep them on the screen of your life here and turn on the projector every morning, turn and look at them and rehash them over and over and over and over again. Because if you don't, you might lose some of those intensity of some of those feelings. It requires a lot of energy and determination to stay bitter in life. But the end results of either choosing bitterness or choosing healing, while they may take roughly the same amount of energy, the results are radically different. One choice leaves you paralyzed in the past. You get a good case of the can't help it's. And you've got an excuse for not doing anything and everything. And you're perfectly satisfied with it. It makes a lot of sense to you. And you just believe if everybody really knew how you felt, then they wouldn't blame you a bit in the world for not doing anything. The other choice gives you hope for the future. In the Christian walk, hurts are inevitable. But because of Jesus Christ, feeling like a victim and deciding to stay here is optional. A story is told about a visit that General Robert E. Lee paid to a lady who owned an old antebellum-style home in Kentucky. He was having refreshments on her veranda, and the lady was angry. And she was bitter about some things that had happened in the war. And she pointed to what was left of this incredible, magnificent oak in front of her house. And she told General Lee about when and where that oak had been planted. And what she could remember about it as a young girl. And how that it had become this huge, sprawling, beautiful oak. That defined, at least as far as she was concerned at that time, her childhood home. And she was upset that the Union artillery fire had ruined the shape and the beauty of that tree, and she wanted General Lee to share in her anger. She wanted that great leader to condemn the Yankees and sympathize with her. And so he listened to her, and he paused and quietly said, "Cut it down, my dear madam, and forget it." Now, how do you think she took that? Lee knew that the ravaged tree would only be a constant reminder of her victimhood, and he wisely suggested that the reminder be cut out of her life so that she could put it behind her. The tree was never going to be the same, and her bitterness was not going to change that. We can choose to turn the hurts that we have in our life into a monument, into a shrine, to our pain, and a constant reminder of what has happened to us, and we can visit it every day of our life if we choose. But it's time for us to follow the words of Robert E. Lee, cut it down my dear brothers and sisters, and forget it. Cut it down and forget it. Let me rephrase the question that Jesus asks. If you're suffering from a pain in your life that's creating bitterness inside of you, and if you're objective enough to realize that, and you know that that is happening or has happened to you in your life, then Jesus comes up to you and he asks you this question. Do you want to get well? Are you going to break into your bitter speak, into your victimhood speech, and let him know how much you've been hurt? Do you realize that that's why he came? To get you well? To enable you to put this behind you and move on with your life in a productive way? And so he comes to you and he asks you, do you want to get well? And it's really important how you answer that question. Jesus is the great physician. And he taught us to say, Lord, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. You know who the debtor is in this instance, don't you? That's the person who owes you because he hurt you or she hurt you. You want the Lord to forgive you as you have forgiven that person? That's what he said he's going to do. And so you have a choice, and I do too. And I thank God that he's given us that choice. Otherwise, we wouldn't know that we had a choice. It's time to cut it down and put it behind us. And if there is something in your life that is keeping you from moving on, and maybe you need the prayers of brothers and sisters just to sit down and hold your hand and pray to God that you can let this thing go. And that you can cut it down and put it behind you and move on and be productive in your life. And Jesus holds his arms out and he says, you who are weary, come to me. You who are heavy laden, you got a real burden in your life, come to me and I'll give you rest while we stand and sing.